So, being a light in the darkness, let's just take a moment together and be in the light. Be the light for a few moments. Just be here. Not as anything, just being here. Notice your breath. Notice your heart. And with each out-breath, just let go a little more into that just being here. And with each in-breath, receive that quiet presence. So from this place, let's listen to this poem from the great Sufi Jalaluddin Rumi, who says everything we need to know about being a light in the darkness. It's titled, "This We Have Now." This we have now is not imagination. This is not grief or joy. Not a judging state, or an elation, or sadness. Those come and go. This is the presence that doesn't. It's dawn, Hussam, here in the splendor of coral, inside the friend. The simple truth of what Halaj said. What else could human beings want? When grapes turn to wine, they're wanting this. When the night sky pours by, it's really a crowd of beggars, and they all want some of this. This that we are now created the body cell by cell, like bees building a honeycomb. The human body and the universe grew from this, not this from the universe and the human body. Well, we could just leave it there and probably should, but let's attempt to fathom this. For Rumi, this is presence. Presence is always available, familiar, shining, behind and within every experience, but so intimate and close to us that we overlook it. Rumi says right away that this is not imagination. By that he means this is not something we've conjured up. It's right here in direct experience, the raw, unfiltered encounter with the now before interpretations and beliefs. He says emotions like grief and joy come and go, but this is the presence that doesn't. He's pointing to the common factor in every experience that does not change and is always available. And then he says to his beloved student, Hussam, who takes dictation from him, "It's dawn, Hussam, here in the splendor of coral, inside the friend, the simple truth of what Halaj said." Dawn implies a recognition of something wonderful and exquisite. The warm splendor of coral inside the friend. As they sit there together, everything is colored by this recognition that they are the one and the particular both at once. You could say they are aware of the screen underlying the movie of life. Heart intelligence also tells them that they are the simple truth of what Halaj said. Halaj was a Sufi saint who famously declared in public, "Anal Haq, I am the truth," which could mean, "I am one with life, which is whole and complete." And that the one who knows this is the only being there is. In other words, all personal identity, separation, and inner division has fallen away in that shared context of shared being. Then Rumi asks, what else could human beings want? He says, when we seem to experience want or lack, we're just remembering like an echo that this presence does not come and go. We're really wanting this, the direct knowing that life is whole and complete. Even the magnificent night sky is by comparison a crowd of beggars longing for this, meaning something as lofty and brilliant as the night sky exists in the realm of the known, but far more wonderful to be the knowing of it. Every sight, as wonderful as it may be, has to be experienced in order for it to truly gain its magnificence, even its existence. Finally, Rumi incredibly asserts that everything comes out of this we have now, not the other way around. The human body and the universe grew from this, not this from the universe and the human body. This turns reality on its head. These last lines blow away the divided way we relate to the universe. Rumi says that when we are knowingly present inside the friend, we are burning intensely with the light that half creates, half perceives the world. Everything we believe about reality, such as we're very small beings in a vast universe made of matter and existing in time, evaporates in the face of this. We are the knowing of life, and we are also the screen that makes the movie possible, awareness. So let's tie a few things together here, and then I'd like to explore a little bit about how we might just notice the truth of what Rumi is speaking about in our lives. Reality cannot be understood until we enter the cave of the heart and there realize the nature of life and mind. Light, or our inherent I am, the light of knowing, is the substance of what we are. But we seem to have our being in the dark. As I spoke about last time I was here, what we are can be expressed in negative terms only, neti neti. Because of a void at the center of our being, we can never know ourselves as any concept or object because it's too close to us. Yet that intimate, placeless place in the dark shines or is self-illuminated like the sun. The sun has no need to illuminate itself. Its very nature is shining. And that's how it is with presence. So to our mind, constantly analyzing, looking for objects, beliefs, possessions, relationships, what we are appears dark, empty, unknowable. But from the point of view of presence, what we are shines as fullness itself. And Ramana Maharshi called this heart intelligence presence entering the cave of the heart. Rumi refers to it as being inside the friend. So how might we approach all this as presence that Rumi describes? So let's kind of continue in our experiential mode, you know. Just be curious and notice. These are not things to do. They are things to notice, and they're probably best done when you're sitting in a time of meditation. First, let's see clearly that this is about what we have now, this we have now. If what we are yearning for is found in our direct experience but has been taken for granted or overlooked, we could just relax, step back, open our curiosity a little bit, and pay attention. We're not trying in any way to change experience. We become curious by relaxing attention on the objects in our awareness, the content of thoughts, feelings, sensations, emotions, images, and become more interested in the context, the spacious field of awareness. We leave the experience completely alone and let our inner, naturally compassionate gaze do the work. Then as we settle into this we have now, just notice some of the facets of presence that are already here. The sage Adyashanti calls presence the felt sense of silence and stillness in the body. So for a while, this could be a contemplation. Mostly we have a concept of silence and stillness, don't we? But the real thing, silence and stillness, we simply recognize. And it's palpable. Notice silence and stillness are already present in your experience. With each out-breath, let go, which is the natural way for the body on the out-breath. And with each in-breath, take in a little more stillness. Meditation can actually be just a quality of listening to your direct experience, especially the quiet places within. Silence is mysterious. It is a powerful phenomenon that has nothing to do with the mind. This is not the silence of a summer evening. It is extremely intimate because it is so very close to us. Allowing silence is a powerful practice. At first it burns, then it soothes. The teacher John Klein says that what we essentially are is silence. If you just feel into it, gradually allowing silence to seep into your felt sense of the body, you will be remembering your home inside the friend. Another pointer from Adyashanti: don't try to create a feeling of quiet. Just notice that stillness or quiet is already present, and join with it. It really is recognizing what has been there all along, and that we already have that, are that. We can be active in the world while rooted in silence and stillness within. And then one more subtle shift. We can go this far and still feel like we have a hold on the steering wheel, a somebody who's in charge. So just let go of being the meditator. Hand the reins of you to the field of awareness itself. You'll be like Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, trusting Krishna to be his charioteer. So we create the conditions for awakening by making friends with the dark of our being and recognizing, or rather remembering, the nature of life and mind. Then we take our presence out into the world. What happens then? The sage Tony Parsons says, presence is the light in the darkness. It is atomic. One moment of presence brings more than 1,000 years of good works. In presence, all action is uncluttered and unsullied. It is spontaneity born from stillness. Deepak Chopra says it this way: bringing presence to a situation, circumstance, event, relationship is not the same thing as the present moment. The present moment is in time. Presence is beyond time. And when you bring presence to any situation, circumstance, event, person, it automatically heals the situation, because presence is the fundamental state of our being, and beyond the mind and beyond all situations, circumstances, events, and relationships. Presence is healing. Presence is beauty. Presence is divine. So both these teachers say that the fire of true presence cuts through the unreal assumptions that we have about life, including the assumed makeup of our consensual reality and the pretense and appearances that human beings so often live by. Presence brings healing. Our presence really is the greatest gift we could give to the world or to ourselves. Here's a bit more from Tony Parsons. When there is presence, there is awareness, and this is the light that enters the darkness. The light enters the darkness and dissipates those illusions that appear to interrupt oneness. Awareness does not divide or suppress and thereby give energy to the unreal. It simply sees what is and brings the light, which allows that which is illusory to evaporate. So, as presence, everything we used to hold solidly about ourselves becomes more fluid, transparent, and thin. More and more, silence and stillness can become the backdrop or screen on which reality appears. Within presence is an inherent guidance, reciprocity, and capacity to meet life. So everything we've been exploring in this Rumi poem about realizing the light of our presence in being is revealed in the great Hindu scripture, the Bhagavad Gita. You may remember the warrior Arjuna had a faintness of heart on the battlefield. Lord Krishna, who's his charioteer just behind him, upbraids him for his faltering view of himself on this path to realization. After challenging Arjuna's view of reality and giving many teachings on selfless service and other matters, Krishna reveals his great being to Arjuna. Quote, with an infinite number of faces ornamented by heavenly jewels, clothed in celestial garments, he showed himself as the infinite Lord, the source of all wonders, whose face is everywhere. The text said, if 1,000 suns were to rise at the same time, the blaze of their light would resemble the splendor of that Supreme Spirit. Arjuna at first quivers and shakes, but then he remembers himself and charges into battle. So that's our being, vast, whole, and complete, able to meet any situation in ourselves or in the world. Can we accept that our shelter from the storm is right there in our direct experience, but so close to us that we overlook it? Krishna declares to Arjuna in Sanskrit, Mamekam Sharanam Vraja, take shelter in me, which is the only shelter. So next time you feel weary and need shelter from the news, from climate change, from difficult feelings, from trouble in the family, just be present. Go to your direct experience. Notice silence and stillness are already there, and simply join with that. You'll be taking shelter in the only being there is, and burning with the clear light of being in the darkness. You'll be a light to others as you cut through the illusions that fuel the situation. Then you will know directly that everything always and ever happens inside the friend. We only seem to leave that cave, but are internally held there. It's not out there. It's in here, in presence, that placeless place of knowing, the luminous cave of the heart. Thank you.